Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, always check out the website, veritasmedical.com. That's veritasmedical.com. Along the way, if you'd like to join in on the conversation, feel free to do so at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. Of course, Dr. Ben Edwards and Melody Wilkes, health coach. Good morning to both of you.
Hello.
Good
morning.
Back to the show. What's the hot topic for today's program?
Well, I thought we'd take a break this week and let the listeners digest the last 2 weeks' testimonials from patients of ours. Both of them were similar stories, some pretty big fellas, and also Deb, the wife of Mitch, the first week.
Yeah.
But these are folks that were overweight, diabetic, on meds, on insulin. Last week we heard Dan Cressman on a 520 units of insulin. And then we're telling you they're off their meds and their sugar's normal and they've lost 150 pounds. And it just, that's a lot for people to wrap their head around, I think.
Yeah, so, right.
This week we're going to just kind of talk about how exactly did that happen? How could this be? I mean, I have to remind myself, I'm 5 years into doing different alternative ways to practice medicine, which, by the way, we all need to be seeking an alternative to our current healthcare situation. I mean, every time I hear a commercial for a pharmaceutical, I just want to pull my hair out and throw some at the TV and go, it motivates me to go give 10 more talks. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you think about the 20th century of medicine, in some ways we were sort of told it was, you know, this amazing century where modern medicine just did some amazing things. And yeah, you can point to a couple things. But overall, I think history is going to say the 20th century was a total, absolute, horrible failure of the medical system in America, at least. And, of course, we influence the world. So, I mean, you can't go from a population of 4% chronic disease, which is what America was in the early part of the 19th century or 20th century in the early 1900s, to 80 to 90% of us have a chronic disease. You can't go from a population of no kids, pretty much, you know, 1% of kids or less has a chronic disease, to now 50% of 12-year-old and under has a chronic disease. I mean, we've been a complete disaster if you look back over the last, really, it's 30, 40, 50, 70 years. It all started when they started changing our food. You know, the more I look back on the history of like saturated fat and cholesterol, there's a great series going on right now. They're probably halfway through or more. It's called The Real Skinny on Fat, The Truth About Weight Loss and Fat. It's just an online documentary. They have a new episode every night. I'd highly recommend it. But watching that just has gotten me to look more into the history. And, you know, we forget that when Eisenhower had his heart attack in the mid to late 50s, his doctor didn't even really know what to do, wasn't even sure, and the country didn't even really know what a heart attack was. I mean, it was headlines, heart attack, and it freaked everyone out. Most cardiologists prior to this time, in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, a cardiology practice would rarely even have a patient that had had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, heart attacks were so rare. Can you imagine a cardiology practice today where the cardiologist said, yeah, it's rare for me to see a heart attack patient? I mean, their clinics are absolutely overrun with them now. It's the number one killer in America. It's just like autism. You know, the child psychiatrist in Dallas who says his entire practice now is filled with nothing but autistic kids. And when he was training in the 1950s, it was a rare disease he had to read about in a book. But to imagine that heart attacks were so rare that cardiologists barely even saw them. I mean, when you look at autopsy reports at the early 1900s, I mean, they were dying from other things, but the autopsies would look and there was no hardening of the arteries. There's no atherosclerosis. This is all a new phenomenon. That's what people just, I think, don't realize. Just like this diabetes thing. I mean, it's absolutely crazy that half the population has diabetes or pre-diabetes. And I mean, it's just, we've got to sort of open our mind, step back, open our mind that our medical system and our food system has been hijacked a long time ago. I mean, that one Ansel Keys article that came out, Ansel Keys was the K rations. That's where the World War II K rations, that's where K came from, it from his name, Keys, K-E-Y-E-S. He was a PhD nutritionist, made a name for himself when he, that was the first processed food. If you think about it, the first packaged, processed, open it up and eat it. Don't have to cook it. Don't have to heat it up. Don't have to do anything. Just open and eat. So he was the inventor of processed food, and it was great. I mean, we needed it during the war. It helped, saved a lot of lives, helped win the war, I'm sure. But when Ansel Keys came out with his preconceived notion that saturated fat and dietary cholesterol caused heart attacks, I mean, that one statement, that one thought, that one recommendation to Eisenhower's cardiologist got the entire country off way, way, way. It was a total disaster. It's what's led to half the kids being sick today with a chronic disease, all the adults having chronic disease, and us having the worst health outcomes in the world and spending the most money doing it. You can really trace it back to, in part, a big part, I would say, to that, because when you take fat out of the diet, what do you replace it with? Carbs. Carbs is what drives inflammation, makes us fat. When you eat carbs, mainly I'm talking corn, wheat, and rice, there are good carbs that are lower glycemic, that don't spike your sugar, sweet potatoes, purple potatoes, quinoa. Of course, vegetables have starch. The root vegetables have more starch than the green leafies. But when you're talking primarily those processed grains, those turn into sugar quickly in the body. That spikes your insulin. Insulin tells you to store fat. So when you take fat out of the diet, you eat more carb, you're going to spike insulin, you're going to store fat, you're going to drive inflammation. Abdominal fat drives inflammation. Insulin spikes drive inflammation. Sugar drives inflammation. Carbs drive inflammation. I mean, that is the root of this inflammatory disease cascade that we're all riding the wave on, and it's crashing down on us all, and our kids are suffering, everybody's suffering. Alzheimer's rates are just going to absolutely skyrocket. I mean, on this documentary, The Skinny on Fat, where they lay out all this very, very well, they had a doctor on there talking about kids 2 years old, 4 years old with type 2 diabetes. Unbelievable. The autoimmune epidemic, all this is rooted in inflammation that in large parts rooted in eating carbs instead of fat. We yank the fat out. I mean, if it says low fat on the package, I want every listener to know and translate that in their mind to, that's how I'll get fat. Eat low fat to get fat. Because again, when they take the fat out, they're going to replace it with carbs or sugar. You can't take fat out of a food and have it taste good. That's what gives food a good taste, is the fat. So they got to put flavor enhancers and sugars, and the grains get you addicted. And I mean, it's just, it's awful.
Okay, let's go to the text line. It says, please discuss our need for the hormone vitamin D. I've read the books Calcium Lie and The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, which both say most Americans are low in this hormone. What blood level should we be reaching for?
In my opinion, a blood level around 20 to 30 is okay. The levels, recommended levels, have changed over the years, and so has my thought has changed over the years. Artificially raising your vitamin D level by which, like he texted in, it is a hormone, not a vitamin. But everyone recognizes the name vitamin D, so I'm going to use it. But artificially raising it with a supplemental form of vitamin D will give a temporary Band-aid benefit effect with unintended consequences long term. Primarily, when you take vitamin D, supplemental vitamin D, number one, it's not vitamin D sulfate. The sulfate part of the vitamin D is what our body makes when we're exposed to sunshine, and that's not only vitamin D sulfate, but melatonin sulfate, cholesterol sulfate. the sulfate portion in all these things is melatonin sulfate is what detoxes your brain at night when you sleep. You only make it when sunshine hits your eye, goes through your optic nerve to your pineal gland, you make melatonin sulfate.
So if I'm wearing sunglasses, would that be
you're
bad?
You're not getting it as much, yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize
you should walk outside staring at the sun.
No,
right?
Not stare at the sun,
no.
But just,
I'm just teasing.
You know, get the sunshine. Cholesterol sulfate is water soluble. When you don't make that because of the lack of sun exposure, then your liver is forced to make LDL cholesterol because LDL attaching to your cholesterol makes it water soluble also. But your body was intended to make cholesterol sulfate via sun exposure. And so what I'm getting at is, yeah, we can take melatonin, we could, or our liver's going to start making LDL because we're not making cholesterol sulfate, and we can take vitamin D in a bottle. There are many people get benefits from melatonin, but what I'm saying is, what was God's original intent? What was the original design? There's other potential benefits we're going to get from getting vitamin D from sunshine that we're not going to get by getting it in a bottle. You'll get some benefit, but not the full benefit, and you'll have unintended consequences. Primarily, you're going to urinate out potassium. Potassium's a mineral that's needed throughout the body. We always talk about magnesium as such an important mineral, and it is the number one, I would say, most important mineral. Copper's probably number two most important, but potassium's right there with it. I mean, you need potassium for so many things, and you're going to urinate it out when you take oral supplemental vitamin D. So I
and that's
think
D3 also.
Right.
Okay.
Calcitriol, D3. So I'm always going to go back to the original intent. Yeah, we need vitamin D. It's really important. But we need vitamin D sulfate, which is what we get from our skin when it's exposed to sun. And not it doesn't have to be obviously you don't sunburn, but you need some sun exposure, 10, 15 minutes. You work up, you know, like spring's coming. We need to start getting some little bit of sun exposure now, even as it gets warmer. Get out and get 10 or 15 minutes every day and slowly work up. And by the time it's summer, you'll have developed your tan, basically, the melanin in your skin, which is a great antioxidant. And as we learned last year, maybe we'll have that guest on again about sunscreen. When you eat antioxidant-rich foods like vitamin A and C-rich foods, those antioxidants go to the skin, and that's your best SPF is melanin and vitamin A and C through the diet. But back to the D, you're going to make D when you're in the sun, and it's going to be D sulfate. It's actually the cholesterol in the skin that gets triggered and changed. A chemical reaction goes on in the skin that's facilitated by magnesium that allows you to make your hormone D and all your other cascade of hormones coming out of cholesterol. So it's an intricate design, you know, intricately designed system that we really need to respect and try to stay in line and in tune with God's original intent. So I think a level of around 30 is fine, and I think you'll be there, or even 40. You'll be there if you get the sun exposure, safe sun exposure, smart sun exposure, and you have enough magnesium.
What about taking the cod liver oil?
Cod liver oil is a good dietary way to get vitamin D. Raw milk's another good dietary way to get D. So those are great. And they're in the right ratio. The thing with D, you want vitamin A and D to be in a ratio that's 10 to 1. And that's what people are forgetting. I mean, they don't even think about vitamin A. And they're just pouring all this vitamin D into themselves. Maybe they're getting some vitamin K with it because that's finally getting some traction. And most vitamin D products now have K with it. K is a vitamin made in your gut by your bacteria. And it helps direct the calcium to go to the bone and the teeth instead of your coronary artery and your joints and your everywhere else. But it's not just K that vitamin D needs to be in balance with. Vitamin A, as an apple. And it's a 10 to 1 ratio. And cod liver oil has that ratio. When you find vitamin D in the body, it's in the liver, for example, it's in that 10 to 1 ratio. The body needs it to be in that ratio. So that's what you see with the raw milk and the cod liver oil. So those are great, but I don't think you'll get enough that way. I think you need the sun exposure, but don't forget the magnesium. And magnesium we're all magnesium deficient because of the stress that we're under. Stress causes us to burn through magnesium. Magnesium is needed in so many different chemical reactions in the body. I mean, it's kind of like the baking soda in your kitchen if you're a baker. Yeah, there's lots of different ingredients in a bakery, but the one main one, if you don't have it, it's going to affect all the recipes. Same with magnesium. It's needed in so many different recipes in the body. And so if stress causes you to deplete it, then a lot of different chemical reactions in the body are not going to work right, one of which is the vitamin D. That's, I think, why we're so low, not only the lack of sun, but the lack of magnesium. So going back to where I was before on the fat deal, Ansel Keys telling us to get off saturated fat, I want to remind everybody that study that he looked at, I mean, he had this preconceived notion. He was traveling around Europe, and he just observed that some countries that don't eat much saturated fat don't have much heart attack. But what he failed to mention was there's lots of countries that do eat a lot of saturated fat and also don't have heart attacks, like France. What you really see if you go back and look at the literature and just the customs at the time, smoking. That's when cigarette smoking really started ramping up in the 20s, 30s, 40s. That was huge. Doctors were even promoting it. I've seen advertisements in the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, promoting it.
Yeah,
doctors saying, you know, Marlboro or Camel, I forget which brand, but this is the doctor's preferred choice. Smoke 10 of these a day to clear your lungs or something
like that.
And Eisenhower, I recently learned, was a four-pack-a-day smoker. And so that's the part that was ignored. All the smoking that was taken off in that time period and heart attack rates started to climb. So people were looking for an answer, and Ansel Keys decided the answer was going to be saturated fat, and he published a study where he cherry-picked data only from the countries that matched his hypothesis, and he left out the data from the countries that did not match. So he only published 7 countries instead of the full 22. But when you go back and look at all 22 countries, you see, no, it's not saturated fat. But anyways, Eisenhower had his heart attack. Everybody freaked out. No one knew what to do. Heart attacks were so rare. Ansel Keys comes to the rescue, got on the cover of Time magazine, tells everybody to pull saturated fat out of the diet and start eating grain, basically. Start eating more carb and whole grain. Well,
and that's still today. I mean, I was just I was going to say, I've read 3 stories over the weekend, Dr. Edwards, that talked about the DASH diet. And it talked about how that.
And who came up with that diet? American Heart Association.
Right. And it was saying about how that the DASH diet is the perfect diet for those wanting to reduce their instances of heart attack, hypertension, on and on and on, which basically is the standard American diet from 20, 30, 40, 50 years. They're saying that's the way to go.
Yeah, I know.
And these are studies out of like John Hopkins and other places. Oh, we did this double blind study of, 8,000 participants that, and I'm going, is that true? Is that, it doesn't sound right to me.
I'll have to look at the study to be able to refute it appropriately.
I can pull it up.
Just like the, the cholesterol advertisements. I did a talk a few months ago on my first Tuesday talk, which, by the way, first Tuesday's tomorrow night. Come out to Veritas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving a talk. But I think this was December, maybe, the cholesterol myth and statin and statistical gymnastics. And, I mean, all these magazine ads and New York Times and everyone else, the big headlines, 36% reduction in heart attack, 50% reduction in heart attack. And that was the relative risk reduction. And every single advertisement and every single headline, including the ones you probably read this weekend, are going to be relative risk reduction, which is a statistical term that's meaningless to doctors. What doctors and patients should care about is absolute risk reduction, which is a different statistical term. I don't know that we want to get into all the math of it, but I'll give you an example. The Lipitor ad that used to play and say 36% reduction of heart attack, that was relative risk reduction. In fine print, they did put an asterisk on the 36%. In the very smallest fine print of the magazine ad, it said, this means that the absolute risk reduction went from 3% to 2%. Translation, there was really just a 1% reduction of heart attack in all these patients who took Lipitor, not a 36%. So how can they sit there and put a big old 36% on the front page of the paper because they're trying to sell a drug? You know, it's the only conclusion I can come to. But it's clear. The literature is clear, and I can't scream this loud enough. Statin drugs will lower your cholesterol and your LDL. So what? Does that translate to decreased heart attack, decreased stroke, decreased death? No, it doesn't. There's even literature that says people with higher LDL live longer and have less dementia and have less diabetes and have less of a lot of different things. Again, because cholesterol is not the root cause. What is the root cause of heart disease is the question. What's the root cause of diabetes is the question. I'll have to read it and study that. But Wade's trying to show me that article on Dash Diet. Let me give my two cents on diet. Number one, I hate the word diet. We need to just eat real food, eat like our great-grandparents did. Let's eat like we did when our chronic disease rates were 4%. Let's just start there. Let's just backtrack and get back to how we ate before we had chronic disease, before we had 50% of our kids sick, before diabetes was, you know, every other person, before heart attacks were the number one killer in America, before cancer was 1 out of 2 men, 1 out of 2.5 women, you know, before Alzheimer's was astronomically climbing. Let's just go back then. What did people eat? Back in the old days, they ate bacon and lard and tallow. More important than that, though, they ate vine-ripened food out of the garden. I just saw a headline about bacon causes cancer.
If it has the nitrates in it.
If you have the nitrates, it's processed that way. But even you know, any of these processed meats, they're going to have the nitrates, and that drives inflammation in the gut. But what decreases that inflammation in the gut? If you marinate these meats in rosemary or some other herb, or you consume a lot of antioxidant-rich foods at the same time, then there's no increased risk of cancer. Why is that? Because the antioxidants squelch the free radicals that come with these processed foods. My point being, back in the day, people were eating vine-ripened tomatoes and peppers and berries and fruit in season only and everything out of the garden. So it was full of the phytonutrients, full of the antioxidants, full of the vitamin C, whole food vitamin C, which is full of copper. People were eating their liver, the organ meat, again, full of copper and B vitamins. We were eating a diet that was just real food, and it was balanced, and it was nutrient dense, and our soil wasn't depleted. That's what we've got to get back to. Just eat like we used to eat all these thousands of years since we were created, and not eat man-adulterated, man-altered. We'll have to get into these grains. There's 4 distinct things wrong with our grain today, but anyways. How we used to eat was higher fat, moderate protein, low carb. And that's how we need to eat today, and it'll give you great health outcomes as evidenced by the last 2 weeks of testimonials of our patients. We got a question.
Yeah, so this question coming in saying, my brother is legally blind now because of getting a CT scan using the dye that was injected to get the CT scan. It hurt him. Bad while they were injecting it. All of a sudden, he couldn't see.
Oh my gosh.
And a few days later, he started to swell from his feet to his waist.
Wow.
He started feeling very weak as days came and went. His shoes don't fit because of swelling. He started to have trouble with his eyesight. Went to the doctors. They gave him a shot. That didn't help. So he's legally blind right now. What do you suggest?
That's
interesting.
Awful.
I've had a CT scan,
that's
and that was the most.
Awful.
They stuck the dye in my hand, and it hurts so bad. Trying
the
to
dye hurt.
Just trying to find the vein. The lady was digging around, hitting bone, and.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's beside the point. I mean, this. I've never heard of something like this, but that's crazy.
A very, very rare occurrence. As I used to always tell my patients on everything, every medical procedure or prescription I'd give them, it's a very rare occurrence that this could hurt you. But. It occurs, and when you give a whole lot of medicines and do a whole lot of procedures like we do in America, then these unfortunate unintended consequences do happen to the number of, now it's the third leading cause of death in America, these unintended consequences. As far as this particular caller who's texting, or listener who's texting in, part of my answer would depend on how acute is this. I mean, did this happen last week, or is this 3 years ago? I mean, obviously there was a toxic injury. Let me back up. Just about every single thing that could damage us, including dye from these CAT scans. But you could talk about rattlesnake venom. You could talk about tetanus. You could talk about Ebola. You could talk about whatever. Any poison, any chemical, any toxin. The way anything hurts us or kills us, ultimately at the cellular level, what's happening is these toxins are electron stealers. That dye that got shot in was an electron stealer. So we're robbing electrons, these negatively charged particles, from the cells of our body, from the mitochondria, from the cell membranes, from our cells. Because electrons want to be paired, just like you and Melody here. I mean, y'all want to be paired. You want to be walking down
23 years and counting.
You want to be holding hands, right, strolling down the path. You don't want to be by yourself. It's the same with electrons. Electrons want to be paired. And when one electron is ripped away by something more powerful, and that's what these toxins do. They rip away electrons. Well, now you rip away enough electrons from a cell, it's going to die. So how to overcome that? Give an electron donor. There are substances in the earth that donate electrons to us. They have extra electrons, and they want to give them up, and they do give them up. These are called antioxidants. Vitamin C is a great antioxidant, and I'm going to pick on it a little bit because it has the most literature behind it. 80 years, roughly 120,000 different articles of using in an acute situation like this, IV, intravenous, vitamin C. Doses in the gram range. You know, a little bit of vitamin C over the counter, you're maybe getting 100 milligrams, 500 milligrams. I'm talking 50,000 milligrams, which would be 50 grams. Or 100,000 milligrams, which would be 100 grams. IV will donate so many electrons to you in that moment, in this emergency, sick, acute moment. It can save your life. It can reverse any damage that's done, including this blindness. There was a study, I believe this was, it was back east recently, North Carolina or Virginia, a doctor in the ICU. He did a study on ICU patients. I mean, ICU patients are really sick, just like this guy. I mean, he's swelling, his eyesight's now, he's blind. I mean, he's got multi-system organ involvement, it sounds like to me. He's got a big toxic burden in him. And that's an ICU patient. It's just more extreme, where it's life-threatening, and you're on a ventilator, and every organ's failing, and you're shutting down. So they put these guys on high-dose vitamin C. They only did, I think it was 14,000 milligrams, which is 14 grams, which is pretty, I mean, it's okay. But like in our clinic, we'll do 20 or 40 or 50 or 100 in some patients that need that much. Anyways, the results they got were amazing. There's a scoring system for patients in the ICU that basically they score how damaged each organ is. And the worse you score on this test predicts whether you're going to walk out of the ICU or not, whether you're going to survive or not. The score in the patients who got the IV vitamin C plummeted in a good way. All the organ systems improved, and it didn't matter what they were in the ICU for, whether it was from a toxic burden like this guy in his CAT scan, or as a car wreck or a gunshot wound or whatever traumas, or just multi-system organ failure from chronic disease or whatever, massive infections, they all across the board improved dramatically.
Would that not help with dementia then?
Yeah, I mean, dementia is brain inflammation, so if you can donate electrons back into the brain, then that's going to be beneficial too. But with dementia, a lot of times you have these amyloid plaques. So these are sticky protein entanglements that are dysfunctional. It's kind of like debris. You've got trash in the brain. And that came from years and years and years of oxidative stress. So that's harder to reverse, although there's one out in California that's just published a paper that's reversing it through dietary strategies that reduce oxidative stress and inflammation. But what I'm getting back to this texture, if this was an acute injury, then I would be looking at ways to pour in antioxidants, electron donors. Electrons are being stolen from his eyes, and he needs to put a lot of electrons back into the body so that the eyes can be healed. The retina happens to be the place in the body with a high amount of native antioxidants in the retina.
Aren't your eyes like one of the fastest healing parts of your body?
Yeah, the cones and rods every 48 hours roughly. But and I want to, after this caller, I want to go further than vitamin C. I'm taking that as an acute injury. You're super sick, like those sepsis people in the ICU, and they got high-dose vitamin C, and they did so much better because it's an electron donor.
Yeah, but if he were to walk in, say now, and talk to the general practice,
a doctor doesn't even have a clue.
He would regular be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean... clueless, as I was too. I don't want to dog all these doctors because that's how we're trained. We're not trained in vitamin C. We're not trained in any of this. But we'll get into that after this this call. And I want to talk more about there's something better than vitamin C even for electron donation. But let's take this call.
Good morning. Welcome in.
Good morning. I'm a survivor and I'm an encourager. And I want Dr. Ben to know, when you wake up with 8 young interns, you wonder if you're in a dream or did it really happen. Tell Dr. Ben he's doing positive, wonderful, good stuff, and to encourage. Our doctors, our primary care doctors, are now listening. So keep on keeping on. Melody, stay in there. These guys understand. Come on, kiddos, get with it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for the pep talk. I need that. I do get discouraged when I feel like I'm the only one out there, yeah. Which I know I'm not the only one, but it feels like it a lot of times when so many people are just ignorant. They haven't heard the truth. I was at a church last week giving a presentation, probably 80 people there, and it was great. And I mean, they came up afterwards and just some of them with tears in their eyes saying that was the best talk I ever heard. And I'm not tooting my horn. They were saying it because of the information and it's the truth. And when the truth resonates with you and it gives you hope and you know, there's life out there beyond this chronic illness and disease. But when we come back from the break, we'll talk more about IV vitamin C, the research going back even in the 1940s. But then we'll talk about something even more powerful than vitamin C that God gave us. So we'll take a break real quick. All right, back to that.
Back to the eyeballs.
Yeah, the eyeballs.
And then we had a caller during the break, too.
Oh, right. Yeah, let's hit that first, yes. So don't forget. That caller, he called last week and recommended a documentary series, iThriveSeries.com, I believe, which the first two episodes were really, really good. And then they started to shift in the later episodes, like episode 4 in particular, into a take fat out of the diet, more vegetarian, and I would not recommend that. The series that's going on right now that I mentioned earlier in the show, the real skinny on fat. That's an excellent series, with much more of the truth. Now, vegetarian, I'm going to say there's a lot of value to plants, and that should be mostly what we're consuming is colorful, organic. Again, back, how did we eat? How did our great grandparents eat before we were all sick? They all ate organic. They didn't have to call it organic. We weren't spraying stuff on our food back then. It does affect us. We're going to have to replay that show with Stephanie Seneff sometime. And the doctor from Purdue, the expert from Purdue on Roundup. Anyways, that's another conversation. I don't want to get off on a tangent. But vegetables are very, very, very beneficial. That's the majority of what should be going in our mouth is colorful purples, reds, greens, and yellows. So I'm all about vegetarian meals, but we've got to have high quality, in my opinion, high quality grass-fed meat in moderation. portion size and number of servings and all that needs to be limited on the meat. It's got to be looked at more as a delicacy, and we've got to bring the organ meat back in. 5 ounces of beef liver a week would be tremendous. So I'm all about vegetables for sure, but I don't believe a strictly vegetarian for all the time, you know, no questions asked, no exception to the rule. I don't think that's the truth. I don't think that's the most righteous and healthy way to go, but some people will do better with primarily vegetables with a little bit of meat.
Of course, back to the blind person with the CT scan, he said it's been going on 2 years now.
Yeah.
The swelling has gotten better. Vision has improved some, but still is legally blind.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
thanks for that clarification.
Again, since I'm not their doctor, I can't give specific medical advice, but this wouldn't be actually medical advice because I'm not diagnosing or prescribing. Obviously, there's damage in the eye, so I would highly recommend this person look into taking antioxidant type stuff, not only dietarily, orally, but there's even drops. N-acetylcysteine, or NAC for short, N-A-C. These are available over the counter. They're eye drops called NAC or N-acetylcysteine eye drops. And those are great antioxidant eye drops. You can use those. Anybody can use those. Get them over the counter. But I would really consider, of course, I'm not trying to drum up business, but it's hard not to say, come see us, because I know you're suffering and I know
I'll say it. Go see them.
I know there's not a whole lot of hope. Otherwise, what's going to be done otherwise is trying to block inflammation with a chemical. That's what drives me nuts about the commercials. All these commercials are drugs that block part of your inflammatory cascade. All these diseases, all this damage is done by inflammation, oxidation. So these drugs and shots in the eyeball, they're blocking different chemicals that are part of your inflammatory cascade. The problem is that inflammatory process is chronically turned on, and it shouldn't be. Our inflammatory process should be for a moment. You get a bug or a germ in you or a trauma, and your inflammation ramps up to kill that germ, bug, toxin, and then the healing process kicks in, and you heal, and your inflammation turns off in a few days. That's how it should be. We get stuck in chronically inflamed mode. Why? A big part of why is because our healing mechanisms can't kick in, our antioxidant enzymes. And this is where I'm going beyond vitamin C. Vitamin C has 2 electrons to donate, which is great. And if you give enough vitamin C, that's a whole lot of electrons you can donate. And that's why these high doses, IV, in the ICU had such great results. But God gave us things inside the body that have 1,000 electrons to donate. Way more powerful than vitamin C. And they are called antioxidant enzymes. And there's a number of them. Ferrooxidase is probably the number one most powerful. Glutathione, a lot of people have heard of. Catalase, superoxide dismutase. These are enzymes that donate electrons. After they donate, they can run back to the sideline and go get a lot more electrons and get right back on the field and play some more. It's like you have a constant supply of bullets from your supply brigade, and you go donate all your electrons. These enzymes turn around, go get more, and they come right back to the game and go give. And so it's a constant recycling, and they're always donating electrons. It's awesome. However, these antioxidant enzymes will not work when you have excess iron in the body. Iron will absolutely shut these guys down. Also, these enzymes need magnesium and copper. Copper comes from organ meat. Copper comes from whole food vitamin C from the food, but it's depleted. It's not in our food anymore. 80% of the copper in the vegetables is gone. The studies show from the 1950s to today, it's just gone. Organ meats is where it's at. But no one's eating organ meats. So we don't have copper. Mag is burned out through stress, I mentioned earlier. So those two minerals we need to turn these antioxidant enzymes on. And then iron blocks them all. They started adding iron to our food in the 1940s. the iron in the food is ferrous iron. That's not good. That is iron filings, iron shavings. And if you don't believe me, just go Google, because I did it this weekend myself. I was planning on going to the grocery store and buying some Quaker oats and some Raisin Bran and Total and Kellogg's Frosted Flakes and Enfamil baby formula and Similac baby formula, and go home, put it in my little Nutribullet with some water, grind it all up, pour it into a Ziploc bag, seal the bag, and then get a powerful magnet on the outside of that bag and rub it around on that cereal slurry and see what you get. And what you're going to find is these little dark black, tiny little hair-looking fibers, the iron.
Ooh.
It is iron in the food. That is literally what is put into the cereal, into the baby formula, into anything that's fortified. So we're talking pasta, crackers, chips, bread, cereal, cookie, cakes, donuts, pizza crust, i.e. the standard American diet. We start with cereal, we eat a sandwich for lunch, and spaghetti at night. I mean, it's in all of us. Enriched, stay away from it. Enriched means they've added stuff back to it. Which, number one, why did they have to add back to it?
Mm-hmm.
Because they stripped it out of it during the processing of it. Or it's not even in there because of the farming techniques. But iron-enriched, fortified foods, which is really in a lot of these kids' foods, it's iron filings. I'm telling you, go
that's
just
so
Google iron filings in the food, and you'll see these things. Or just do it yourself. Make it a science project for your kids.
That'd be cool.
That's what I was going to do this weekend. We didn't get around to, but we're going to do it.
Okay, you said to do what now for the experiment? Go get whatever's iron.
The 1 minute Quaker oats in a package, the microwavable oats. Get 8 or 9 of those packs, or a couple of cups of Total cereal, any cereal. Anything, I say Total because that's the one that says it has the total amount of vitamins and minerals you need. It meets all your RDA, mm-hmm. recommended daily allowance of iron, and everything else is in Total. So get that, but you can get any of the cereals because they're all made with enriched white flour.
Okay.
So really, that's the ingredient you'll be looking for. Is there iron in it? Does it say enriched? So anyways, get these cereals or baby formula or whatever, Quaker oats, and put them in a blender with a little water.
How much water?
A cup of water. You just want it to
moisten it,
yeah, to where it can pour.
Okay.
Blend it all together for, 20 seconds or something, and pour it into a Ziploc bag. Or go on YouTube, and you'll see the guys that have done it for you, but do it yourself if you want to. And then get a magnet and just rub it around the outside of that bag and see what comes to the surface. And it's iron filings. And I know that sounds crazy, but it is what it is. Well, iron is the number one driver. You want to talk about an electron stealer? Iron is going to steal electrons from the cells of your body faster than anything. So.
Did you say you had to chill it, or you can do it immediately?
No, you don't have to chill it. Doesn't matter. Just right away. Pour it out.
I'm going to
do
this.
Do it.
This will be cool.
That's so gnarly. I mean, it is. I mean, just think about that in your body.
I'm going to get your Taco Villa flour tortilla and do
stuff.
It to that.
Oh, wait a minute.
In one of the videos I watched, though, actually, they went to Walmart and found some product. I forget what it was. Some flour-based pastry or something. But he read the ingredients. It wasn't enriched white flour. His assumption was, Walmart's all about value and,
mm-hmm.
and cheap.
Value in quotes.
That it probably cost a little bit more to get the enriched flour to make the Walmart brand of this product.
Great value.
So they didn't go through the extra expense of getting the enriched white flour. It was just white flour. Mm-hmm. Wasn't enriched.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that product, there wasn't any iron. I'd actually say use that one instead.
Great value wins out.
Yeah.
That's
so
funny.
If you're going to do the experiment, don't get the super cheap Walmart generic brand of Wheaties because it may not be enriched, which is actually good.
That's funny.
Get the regular brand names that have enriched flour. But so that's the number one thing that went wrong with our wheat was they started putting iron filings in it. And in some people, if you just don't eat that, You might still be eating wheat. It could still be hybridized. It might even still have glyphosate on it. And some people, just getting the iron filings out might be enough to reduce their oxidative stress, that their symptoms can get better.
How can we detox out of the iron filings?
Donate blood?
That's very, very difficult to do. Donation of blood is a way to get iron out of your body, period. The body's going to use iron to build red blood cells. When you donate blood, obviously you're donating red blood cells, so your body's going to go make more. So it'll eventually use up your iron stores, but you've got to quit eating it. You got to quit getting excess iron. Now, iron that's found in food and vegetables and nuts and seeds.
Naturally occurring
in the food. That's a different form of iron. It's fine, and it's not very much, actually. But this fortified, added extra stuff, and that's not even talking about supplements. You know, your multivitamin with iron that's in every women's and prenatal.
Syndrome.
Yeah. Get off all that. You've got to
silver.
You've got to stop the source of the iron.
It's a great combination.
But when you blood donate blood and it's pulling iron out, then I feel bad. Are people who get your blood, are they getting iron?
That's in a form that is good. I mean, the body has changed it and used it and built it into hemoglobin. Hemoglobin carries oxygen, so they're getting it. Although, there could be some iron just in the serum, not actually in the red blood cell. But if someone's getting a blood transfusion, they need it. So don't feel bad. They've lost blood and they actually need it.
I've donated, let's see, since I started on the protocol. I'm fixing to donate again this week. This will be my third or fourth time. Can you donate too much?
Yeah, I mean, you can, theoretically, you could donate too much where you get anemic.
But
they won't let you because they check your hemoglobin before you donate. It's got to be above a 14.
Well, I went to them and then I went to y'all.
Well.
But I was sick. Well, I was symptomatic when I saw y'all, so I knew not to go donate. But.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you'll have to be assessed by who's ever pulling the blood.
What about me? I can't donate blood to the United Blood Services because I've had smallpox. I've had anthrax.
Therapeutic phlebotomies. That's where a doctor orders a blood draw and they just throw it away.
I haven't had a blood draw in around years.
You're probably full of iron. And iron, when you have too much, it's going to go in the organs, so like your liver, but your endocrine glands. That's your adrenals, your thyroid, your ovaries, testes, stuff like that.
Yeah, your ovaries are way overloaded.
You're looking a little more girlish lately. No. But
man boobs.
The organs, the joints. It'll go to the joints and drive all the oxidative stress.
Could
the
it
joints,
also create
arthritis,
gout situations?
High blood pressure.
Oxidative stress is gout. Yep, too much uric acid. It's all I'm telling
everything.
You, every single disease, quote unquote, is driven by and has a common denominator of oxidative stress inflammation. But when you trace these things back, how did it get this way? Well, you know, 70 years ago we weren't like this and now we are. They started adding iron to the food. That's number one. That and probably the biggest. Number two, they started hybridizing the wheat. So it went from 14 chromosomes to 46 chromosomes. These new chromosomes in our wheat today have different gluten proteins being made from these from the hybridized chromosomes, DNA, genes. So it's a totally different wheat from a gluten standpoint. It's a different wheat from an iron standpoint. Also, when they hybridized it, it changed the starch content. So now when you eat any kind of wheat, whole wheat, white wheat, regular, any kind of wheat, the starch content is such that it'll readily, quickly, aggressively change into sugar, into glucose in your body. Within 5 seconds of chewing on whole wheat bread, you're raising your blood sugar. Two pieces of whole wheat bread raises the blood sugar as fast as a can of soda. So starch content change spikes your sugar quickly. That spikes insulin. We talked about that earlier in the show. That drives storage of fat, and it drives inflammation. And then the fourth and final thing and reason to stay off of modern adulterated wheat is glyphosate. They have learned, not the wheat around here that they just grow for cover crop. We don't eat this wheat. Back up north and in the Midwest, they grow the wheat that we eat. Well, back there, 80% of the farmers are spraying their wheat with glyphosate, which is Roundup, immediately prior to harvest. It's called desiccation, so it dries it out. It kills the crop so the next crop can be planted quickly, and it also stresses the plant and makes about 10% more seed. So they've put this chemical that, and what glyphosate does, it chelates our minerals, it kills bacteria in our gut, and it opens a tight junctions in our gut, basically punches holes in your gut wall. So there's four big reasons that wheat, modern wheat, is killing us. The iron, the new gluten's, it gets changed into sugar readily, and glyphosate sprayed on it right before harvest. So, in some people, you can just eat organic wheat, doesn't have the glyphosate. That might be good enough. That might get your load of oxidative stress down enough. Some people, they need to get the new gluten's to be gone. They need to eat ancient wheat. It might even be enriched still. That might be enough for them. But why hedge the bet? If you know all four of those things are bad for you, let's not wait for disease. If you're not diseased or symptomatic now, let's not wait. If you're already diseased, let's not just take out the glyphosate only. Let's do it all. Get all the way back to how your great-grandparents used to eat. Einkorn, E-I-N-K-O-R-N. That's the original wheat. They sell it here at Natural Grocers, or you can get it other places maybe. Online for sure.
What do you think about quinoa? Like they have
quinoa's great pasta. Quinoa is awesome. It's a seed, but you can use it a lot like rice. It's full of nutrients. It's not GMO. It doesn't have Roundup on it. It's not iron enriched. Although I guess they could try
that pasta to be closer to what everybody's more accustomed to.
Yep. Yeah, there's all kinds of different pastas that aren't whole wheat. So there's brown rice pasta. There's black bean pasta I've seen.
Ooh,
there's
einkorn,
this original wheat, einkorn pasta. There's the quinoa pasta. There's all kinds.
There's veggie pasta.
But a lot of it, you know, that's okay to just try to flip your spaghetti to some other kind of spaghetti. But really, we got to get down into, and that's what the purpose of the documentary series I'm recommending everyone go watch, this Real Skinny on Fat, is we need to shift just the way we eat. The ratios of what we eat, the not only the quality type of food and get off the enriched stuff, but a lot more fat, saturated fat, high fat, moderate protein, low carb. So even if you're going to eat your einkorn flour, spaghetti noodles or bread or whatever, it needs to be a rare occasion. You need to eat a whole lot more proportion-wise. I would say, I heard this on the documentary series, 2 handfuls of greens or veggies, what you could grab with 2 hands, 2 palmfuls of protein, 2 thumbfuls of fat. It's one way one doctor kind of gets his patients to think about it.
Wait, say that again. That was for what now? For
just to shift the way you eat to get more fat into the body.
For meal or for day or what? You said 2 handfuls.
That'd be for a day probably.
For day, 2 handfuls.
2 handfuls of greens, 2 palmfuls of protein, 2 thumbfuls of fat. So what his point there is, you don't just saute your veggies in olive oil. That's fine and great, or butter. But then when it's on your plate, put 2 thumb, you know, size pats of butter on top of it. You need to be getting extra fat, not just what you're cooking in. So, you know, eat the fattier cuts of meat even, especially if it's from a wild caught or pasture raised type thing. Eat the egg yolk. Don't get the low-fat stuff. Why? Number one, fat for fuel. When you eat fat like this, you're not eating carb. Carb is going to spike insulin, store fat. I mean, how do we get pigs and cows fat? We send them to the feed yard and feed them corn and grains. That's what gets us fat, because you spike insulin. Insulin tells you to store fat. So you eat fat not to get fat. You eat fat for energy. Fat gives you energy, it gives you brain clarity, it gives you a sense of fullness, it tastes good, you're satisfied, you're happy, you can go 4, 5, 6 hours, sometimes all day. It trains your body's carburetor, the mitochondria, to burn fat for fuel. We're all in sugar burn mode, we need to flip our switch in the mitochondria, which is our carburetor inside our cells, switch it into fat burn metabolism. The fat burns cleaner. The byproducts, when you make energy, you're going to be making exhaust. It's just the way the body works. That exhaust contains free radicals. Those are electron stealers. The body will come in with electron donors and clean up your free radicals. No problem. Well, burning carbs and sugar produces way, way more exhaust, way dirtier exhaust, a lot more free radicals, reactive oxygen species, we call them. You need to have a whole lot more electron donors come in to deal with sugar and carb burning. So cutting that down will help, because when you burn fat, you're not going to be creating so much oxidative stress, free radicals, reactive oxygen species. You don't need as much antioxidant power in there. And you're going to make a whole lot more energy when you burn fat, 140 gallons or miles per gallon when you burn fat instead of 32 miles per gallon when you burn sugar. You make a lot more ATP. That's your energy molecule. So every which way you look at it, guys, we need to get back to how we used to eat and live way before all this chronic disease hit us. So get back to eating how your great-grandparents did, and we'll talk more next week about that, hopefully. But this is how these guys got rid of their diabetes. They ate real food, high fat, low carb.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Edwards. We appreciate it. Of course, you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for past shows. We have them uploaded there. Have a wonderful rest of the week. We'll see you right back next time on the show. Stick around. Unconfused, up next.